So this is part two of the Thursday broadcast that was interrupted by a little technical difficulties, and we were just in the middle. Yeah, right. We're just in the middle of running down the UFC card for this weekend, and I was talking. I believe when we trailed off, I was trying to describe how Gabriel Gonzaga is on this card versus Ben Rothwell. And Gonzaga, I think this is the second fight of his comeback after he retired and then unretired. Rothwell is pretty famous for being in the IFL for most of his career, I think, and through a lot of other circuits. His record is 32-8 coming into this one. I'm not sure what his history is with the UFC, how many fights he's had. I think he's at least had one fight in the UFC before, but don't quote me on it. Gonzaga's actually from Massachusetts, and I actually ran into him at a fight where actually John Jones fought on one of the smaller circuits before he ever got to the UFC. And I'll never forget it because I was talking to this kid. I actually made a bet on a hometown guy that ended up losing the fight. And this little kid from high school behind me in the audience was down there, and I says to him, is that Gabriel Gonzaga over there? That's not Gabriel Gonzaga, is it? And he's like, yeah, that is. And I go, I don't think so. I'm going to go after him. So I go, are you Gabriel Gonzaga? And he's like, yeah, I am. I was like, oh, no way. I could have sworn you weren't him, but I ended up getting an interview with him later. It was on fnu.mypodcast.com, which is now a site that has disappeared into the netherworld of the internet. But thankfully, I have every file from there saved on my other computer. So one of these days, I'll have to go through all those and recreate them somewhere on another free hosting site somewhere, which will be a project. But it'll be worth it. There was a lot of great interviews in there. So that's one of the fights on Saturday night. We also have C.B. Dolloway, who's 12-4, fighting Daniel Sarafian, who's 7-2. We have Thiago Tavares, who's 17-4-1, fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's 18-0. See how he does, see if he keeps his O intact there. And we have Godofredo Castro, who's 8-1. This is Milton Vieira, who's 13-7-2. We got Ronnie Mars, 1, versus Andrew Crick, 8-0. And the fifth fight of the night, Diego Nunes, who's 18-3, fighting Nick Lentz, who's 22-5-2. And the fourth fight of the night, tough guys. Edson Barboza, 10-1, fighting Lucas Martins, who's 12-0. We have Yuri Alcantara, 27-4, fighting Pedro Nobre, who's 14-1-2. Second fight of the night, Wagner Prado, 8-1, fighting Ildemar Alcantara, who is 17-5. And then we have Francisco Trinaldo, who's 11-2, fighting C.J. Keith. And it doesn't look like he has a record on SureDog anyway. So I don't know what his record is. Now, there's another little story about the UFC that just broke today. Apparently they're changing their whole outlook on international events as far as drug testing goes. All fighters now who compete at international events will be tested for performance-enhancing drugs. And the UFC has traditionally hired independent local facilities to test fighters during events outside of North America, but in the past, only a few fighters per card were selected for the testing. The shift in policy might have been spurred by a recent stretch in which the UFC's independent drug screening busted fighters at 3 consecutive overseas cards. UFC 153 in Rio de Janeiro, where all fighters were screened, resulted in suspensions for Stefan Bonner for Drew Stanalone, Dave Herman for marijuana, and a month later, Thiago Silva tested positive for marijuana at UFC Macau, and finally, Rusamar Paul Jarez and Joey Beltran failed drug tests following UFC on FX6 in Australia. And the wave of botched tests is an embarrassing trend, and the UFC is clearly
trying to get in front of it, testing all their fighters at international events going forward. We'll send a message to fighters who may have considered rolling the dice with banned substances, thinking that the testing policies are a little more lax when former athletic commissions aren't running the show. And on top of all this, Ratner's also stated that from now on, the UFC will no longer pay out their end-of-the-night performance bonuses until drug testing results come back. And the policy changes will be in place this weekend at UFC on FX7, Belfort versus Bisping in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Ironically enough, in 2006, the headliner for this weekend's event, Vitor Belfort, tested positive for 4-hydroxytestosterone following his loss to Dan Henderson at Pride 32. And of course, his defense was tainted supplements, as it often is. Here we go. Here's a nice little boxing story here. Going back to the really old days of boxing, there's a painting that is up for auction this weekend, and it's of a guy named George the Coachman Stevenson, who died tragically 272 years ago, and he holds sort of an unwanted place in boxing history. He was the first guy to die after a boxing match, albeit a bare knuckle one. Stevenson was the first ring fatality after a brutal beating from Jack Broughton. Broughton and Stevenson fought in a booth situated in an alley off London's Tottenham Court Road on February 17th, 1741. And Broughton, known as the father of English boxing, inflicted terrible injuries on the grossly overmatched Stevenson. The merciless beating lasted more than half an hour before the brave 21-year-old Yorkshire lad collapsed unconscious. Broughton went to visit his dying opponent every day, and though he lingered for a month, Stevenson breathed his last breath in Jack's arms. Broughton, in an attempt to prevent such a repeat, devised prize fighting's initial set of rules. And the reason for recounting this sad story is because Bonham's is the auction house that is selling a rare portrait of Stevenson in Knightsbridge on January 29th. And it happens to be a unique picture. The auction house's experts says it is the earliest painting of an 18th century prize fighter in existence and could sell for between £10,000 and £15,000. But if only George had managed to keep his britches done up, he would have lived very much longer. And this is kind of the funny part of the story. The history here is the coachman, is his nickname, was because he was working in the stables as an assistant coachman for Richard Sykes, who was a pig iron and coal merchant from the Hull area of the UK. When the head coachman fell ill, George was asked to take Mrs. Sykes on a 10-mile journey. But as they were returning home, they were waylaid by 3 highwaymen. Stevenson pistol-whipped one, KO'd the second with a punch, and shot the third. So Mrs. Sykes, relieved to have got away with her jewels, offered George sexual favors as a reward. Not surprisingly, it wasn't long before George was promoted to head coachman, and Mrs. Sykes made frequent trips to visit family and friends. Inevitably, her husband became suspicious, and George was fired. So he decided after that to get into prize fighting, and the rest is history. So, ironically, if he wasn't boning the boss's wife, he might still be he might not be remembered as well. He might not have ever heard his story, but he would have maybe lived longer. That was kind of a funny story I found today in the boxings. Let's see what's. Another story I got here. We talked earlier about some of the fighters heading to the UFC. The list of the Strikeforce fighters does not comprise, of course, every single fighter that could eventually be brought over. But UFC Tonight revealed some of the names. Daniel Cormier, of course, we already knew about. In the light heavyweight division, Gegard Mousasi and Gian Vellante are both headed to the UFC 205 division. Of course, Mousasi beat Mike Kyle, as we just mentioned. Middleweight Strikeforce champion Luke Rockhold is one of the folks transitioning over. And Ronaldo Jacare Souza will come with him. Tim Kennedy, Roger Gracie, and Lorenz Larkin will also be coming along to the UFC. And as I said, the two main eventers from the last Strikeforce event, Safadine and Marquardt. In addition to those two 170-pounders, we have Roger Bowling, Jason High, and Bobby Volker. And, of course, the lightweight division will have the most fighters coming to the UFC, with Gilbert Melendez probably the most anticipated fighter to come over. And he's already set to face Benson Henderson at UFC on Fox 7. Also, Josh Thompson will be coming back to the UFC for the first time since 2004. And as I mentioned, Katura Nunes will come over. Also, Pat Healy, Adriano Martins, Kurt Holabaugh, who actually will drop to 145 pounds upon entering the promotion. So there you have it there. Those are the main guys coming over. And it makes it hard to believe that they didn't kill it for a reason after you hear that. How quickly they bring them over. Now, there's a guy who's leaving the UFC, making some headlines. He actually took up a good part of the latest conference call for the UFC on Fox 6 card coming up on January 26th. And it's a wonder they weren't able to cut him off, because he was really negative towards the UFC. This is his last fight on his contract. He's not going to renegotiate. And he's actually talked about following Kimbo Slice into boxing. That's, he says, his biggest challenge that he would like to overcome. So it could be interesting. I mean, I know he has a very good boxing coach. He does fight on his feet a lot, but as we know, MMA and boxing are completely different animals. And we usually see guys from boxing come over to MMA, but rarely do we see guys go the other way like Kimbo just did. And even the jury's still out on him. We haven't really seen much to write home about from him. But anyway, the big beef with Jackson is sponsors. And he actually made a kind of an interesting remark that not a lot of outlets caught, but I've read two different versions of this story, and one of them mentioned his comment that I thought was interesting. But this story says... quotes him as saying, "I'm sponsored by Reebok now, and the UFC says I'm not allowed to wear Reebok in the cage. When I see other fighters sponsored by Nike and stuff, why can't I wear Reebok? Just stupid stuff like that." And he actually added to that comment later on in the statement that he thought it was illegal for them to do that. So I kind of thought it was very interesting that some of these outlets left that part out, because the FTC actually did investigate UFC, primarily related to the Strikeforce merger.
What is the rule on sponsors? I mean, isn't it you have to pay? But now they're saying even if Reebok would pay, couldn't represent them or couldn't show off their product, wear their shirts or something?
Well, they've done stuff like this before. Shane Carwin had an energy drink called Good For You Energy Drink. That was his main sponsor, and they told him, "You can't have that. That's not allowed," because some of these companies sign exclusive sponsorship agreements. Like, you know, it's kind of a bad example because there is no real other frickin' Corn Nuts company other than the Corn Nuts, and they, you know, they always say Corn Nuts, the official Corn Nuts of the UFC, and his energy is the official energy drink of the UFC. So. Even though those companies pay, they have to pay to be associated with UFC fighters and to be able to sponsor UFC fighters, they have to kind of pay like a, I think it's like a $50,000 percentage fee or something like that. It's like a gatekeeper fee, basically, that they invented off the top. But there's that they have to pay just to sponsor the fighter, and then there's the rules of exclusive sponsors who have to actually pay way extra to be the exclusive whatever of the UFC. You know, and you have these companies like when the UFC first took over Strikeforce, you had Rockstar all over the cage, which was their main competitor. And look at this last event, and Strikeforce and Zions and Zenergy is all over the cage. Rockstar is gone.
Surprise, 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 huh?
Right. And I was surprised actually still left Muscle Farm on the map there. A lot of fighters used to be sponsored in the UFC by Muscle Farm, but when the Fertittas bought into Zions, you saw that go away, and it kind of got stuck in just Strikeforce. So they do things like that, and it's rubbing guys like Rampage Jackson the wrong way. And he said it's not about money with the UFC, it's about respect. He says, when I step into the octagon, I put my life on the line and I try to be an exciting fighter. I just don't feel appreciated. I'd rather take a money cut and go to another show and feel appreciated. It has nothing to do with money. And for those hoping that Dana White can resolve their issue and play nice, Jackson doesn't seem all that interested in continuing the relationship. He says, they offered to renegotiate, but I didn't like it. I didn't want it. I think the UFC doesn't know how to treat their athletes. I feel like we're just not taken care of well enough. I feel like they're getting rich off all of us. Some of these guys can't even afford to pay sparring partners. Some guys fight for $10,000 or $20,000. That ain't right. I want to go somewhere where they take care of their fighters and treat us like human beings. And obviously it isn't about money with Jackson, because his last fight came in overweight and put on a less than memorable performance, but still earned $200,000 after they deducted $50,000 for missing weight. So while Jackson spent most of Tuesday's media call speaking out about his upcoming free agency, he did actually address his upcoming fight January 26th against Glover Teixeira. He's one of the more epic MMA records. He's had a lot of fights. And I've seen him in action actually up in Massachusetts once. He's a pretty good fighter. A lot of experience there. But Jackson says he's a guy that says he wants to try and knock me out and stand with me while he's concentrating on mostly taking me down and fighting me on the ground, just like the other guys I've fought. And of course, like I said, Jackson likes to stand up, doesn't really do much ground fighting if he can help it, though he does come from a wrestling background. But he's basically accusing him of a bait-and-switch tactic here. They say that they try and get me to focus somewhere else so they can concentrate on a false game plan and have me training on other areas, but I'm smarter than that now. I've pretty much found out through snitches on the internet that he's basically just going to try and wrestle me. I kind of lost respect for him. I used to respect him a lot as a fighter, but I'm looking forward to a good fight. He says, no matter what the outcome on January 26th, I am going to be happy because I've trained very hard. I've trained to destroy Glover, and I plan on leaving the UFC on a positive note and to go on with my life and let the UFC be in my past. So, there you have it. A lot of buzz about him possibly going into boxing, even though he didn't really spend a lot of time.
Yeah, and after making comments like he did about the ground game, I mean, if he's that repulsed by it, maybe boxing would be a good road for him to go. We'll see what he could do. You said he has the punch, but it's going to be a rough road for him. I just don't know if it's too late to develop all the other tools.
Well, I mean, a guy like that, it's not quite like Kimbo Slice. I mean, Kimbo Slice, you really have to start from the ground up. You can't throw him in with a champion or anything, and you can't really do that with Rampage either, I think, but you can put him in against more accomplished guys. He's a bigger name. He'll sell. He'll sell on a maybe even a co-main event against a guy who's been around for a while, even if he has just as many wins as he does losses. But you don't have to start him off in a four-round fight. I mean, you can go six or eight rounds with this guy, I think, in the right conditioning and environment where he can get in with a good trainer and promoter. Hey, probably even 50 Cent. He likes money. But, you know, I think he would have a good shot at it. I like his boxing style. He obviously has had his ups and downs in the sport. of MMA, but if he had just one discipline to focus on, where he's most comfortable, which is on his feet, and he has the unorthodox MMA style that some boxers would get really confused by, and some of that.
Now, I wonder what weight division he'll be fighting at. If he's going to try to stay or move up to heavyweight or stick with cruiserweight, what do you think?
I think he could beat Thomas Adamek.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. I think he'll stay at cruiserweight, or maybe even, there is pretty much cruiserweight and light heavyweight. That's the only two that he would fall into under heavyweight. But light heavyweight is a long way to go for him, so I think cruiserweight would be more his style.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bellator is actually debuting tonight on Spike TV, so I'm sure they'd be happy to have him, too. They might offer him a quick contract and take him away from those boxing thoughts right away. But I'll definitely be looking for Kimbo Slice versus Rampage Jackson in a boxing ring. That would be exciting. That could be his first fight.
Well, I know I would be watching, that's for sure.
That would be easy to make. And in women's MMA, I have another story here. The women aren't officially in front of the UFC fans yet, but the super fight has already been talked about for 135-pound champion Ronda Rousey and her nemesis Cristian Santos. Previously, Tito Ortiz, who manages Santos now, said that it wouldn't happen, it couldn't happen. She wouldn't be able to make the 135-pound weight limit. It's just been a month after he made those remarks, and he's now changed his tune. On Tuesday's edition of UFC Tonight on Fuel TV, Ortiz says he wants Rousey versus Cyborg to happen, and he thinks Santos would be able to make the weight after being offered the help of famed nutritional expert Mike Dolce, who actually even managed to squeeze a few pounds out of Roy Nelson. So, you never know. Never know. If he can help Big Country, he can help little Cyborg there get down to 135 pounds. Cyborg is 10-1 with one no contest, and she has not competed in MMA since testing positive, since the December 2011 fight against Hiroko Yamanaka under the Strikeforce banner. And she actually tested positive for the anabolic steroid stanozolol, resulting in a one-year suspension from the California State Athletic Commission. And she actually did the old song and dance about, it was a supplement. But this article seems to debunk that myth. Ortiz never failed a drug test in his 28-fight MMA career and says now that he is working with the former Strikeforce champion. No one has to worry about the result of a Cyborg drug test ever again. And he says, last year she got mixed up with a banned substance that one of her trainers turned her onto, but she has said it was her choice and her bad decision, and she was willing to make that right claim. So I'm going to put my name, my stamp on her to ensure that she'll never touch any of those things again and be the champion that she once was before. And from what I read, actually, that drug, stanozolol, is primarily used in cutting cycles. So, basically, she was using it to cut weight. And it's one of those things where if she's using that to cut weight to get to a higher weight than what she's trying to get to now, I mean, how's she going to avoid using stuff like that or something similar to get down to 135? I don't know. But anyway, Tito Ortiz is confident that if the fight materializes, his woman there, Cyborg, will be able to hand Rowdy her first loss as a professional. He says, Ronda Rousey's a great champion. She has a great name. Her attitude has completely changed. I watched her at the awards. When the spotlight is on you, you shine a little harder than you think you do. It's fine. She's a woman who deserves all the championship attention she can find at this point, because when she fights Cyborg, she will no longer be a champion. And UFC 157, Rousey versus Carmouche, is headlined by the first ever UFC women's bantamweight champion bout, as Rousey attempts to defend her UFC title for the first time. And also announced for that card is a light heavyweight contender bout of Dan Henderson versus Lyoto Machida in a bantamweight rematch between Uriah Faber and Ivan Menjivar. So that's a couple little interesting tidbits there from that story. Now, Tony can breathe a sigh of relief because we are going to talk about boxing for a little while. I don't know if you heard this, Tony, but speaking of guys coming out of retirement, we just talked about that with Gabriel Gonzaga. Sugar Shane Mosley is making the news now because he is coming out of retirement. You know who he's going to face? Paulie Malignaggi. Now, I have had my history with Bleacher Report, but I went over to Bleacher Report the other day and I read this story and I said, geez, I am glad I am not working for Bleacher Report with dumbasses like this. Because some guy just totally ripped Mosley and boxing itself and called Mosley's comeback a black eye for boxing. But, you know, I know what Paulie Malignaggi is like. And I think he only has like 6 knockouts to his credit for however many wins he has, last time I checked. So, if I was Sugar Shane Mosley, and I had a shot to come back for a title against a guy who has that kind of knockout percentage, and he's not very removed from his last professional fight. It's not like he left as long as Ricky Hatton did and got all bloated and drunk and messed up on drugs and then tried to come back. He's probably in pretty good shape, you know. So this guy that just totally ripped him apart for coming back, I think is way off base.
Here's what scares me. Mosley's last impressive performance was
Margarito.
That was Antonio Margarito. And that's because it was a fighter that was hyped up, which because we think because he was using an illegal substance in his gloves. When Margarito got those doctored wraps taken out, he became very human looking and pretty much lost every fight, every major fight since. So Mosley really took it to a guy that was slow moving, easy to hit, and maybe had an illegal advantage in some previous fights. So Mosley knocks him out. Then he parlays that into a year later fighting Floyd Mayweather. And looks great in the second round. He has Mayweather stunned. And then he got his ass kicked for the remaining 10 rounds, embarrassingly. Somehow, gets a title fight the following year against Manny Pacquiao. And does even worse. He gets knocked down to the point where his trainers were literally shoving him off the stool because he wanted to throw the talent. If that wasn't bad enough, he tremendous beating at the hands of Canelo Alvarez took a tremendous beating where the fact that I don't know how he went the whole 12 rounds. Now, you take that you take 3 consecutive years he took an atrocious beating. That wears you down. Now, you're right, he hasn't been out of the ring as long as a guy like Ricky had. Or I actually saw a picture the other day when the fight was first announced. They said, this is what it could be. And they took out another well-past his prime fighter who they thought it could happen. He could win this fight. It's an opponent that shouldn't be able to hurt him. And it's a relatively quicker, light punching opponent. And this could be a potentially safe fight. And the results didn't turn out that way. And it was a picture of Ray Leonard's final fight against a quick, yet very light-punching Hector Camacho. which turned out very bad for sure, Ray. They said, this is what it theoretically could be. I don't think Shane Mosley is... I saw the guy fight in person in Philadelphia when he was in his prime. And he was one of my favorite fighters for a lot of years. But I don't think that he warrants a title shot right now. I think that's honestly ridiculous. I mean,
the guy hasn't won a major fight in 4 years, and his last three, basically three of his last fights were title fights, and he had his ass kicked in every one of them.
But who was fighting? I mean, you have to look at those names compared to a guy like the Magic Man, Paulie Malignaggi. You know, he's a tough fighter, but...
I'll give you that. But still, I mean, okay, Paulie's not a big puncher. Yeah, that's one. But you know what? But look at it this way. Does Paulie Malignaggi have a world title bout, yes or no?
Yes.
What has Shane Mosley done to earn a world title shot?
Nothing, except have a name. I mean, I will admit that, but, I mean, he's earned that.
Exactly.
He's been in with the toughest guys.
He has not done anything to earn a title shot. So, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter if he can beat Malignaggi, and it doesn't matter, you know, if Malignaggi's, like they say, okay, you know, he's not an elite champion right now. That doesn't matter. And in fact, I think it would be worse if Shane won the title here, because then what's going to happen? He's going to fight again, and, you know, say, he beats Paulie Malignaggi, for example, and he wins his title, I guess it's at 147 pounds or whatever it is. I'll have to go back and I'll look at it a little bit more in depth. And say that earns him a fight with a guy like Boston Trout, who I know right now is at 154, but work with me here. Say that earns him a fight like that, or earns him a fight with one of these young and up-and-coming welterweights out there, or a rematch with a guy like Canelo Alvarez.
Well, what stops him, though, from getting the title and then retiring with the title?
Fighters on this weekend. We got a kid that I know from Philadelphia sitting up in Connecticut, Joey Darko. He is 7-1, 3 knockouts. He's fighting Gerald Miller. It's 4-0 with 4 knockouts. They're playing up in Connecticut. I know Joey. I've met him a couple times in Philadelphia. And
he bailed down on our show not too long ago.
Was he supposed to know our show?
Yeah, he never answered his phone.
Oh, I remember that, yes. I do remember that. We got the main event of that card is Sergey Kovalev, 19-0, 17 knockouts. He's fighting former world title challenger Gabriel Cantillo, who a lot of people thought beat Marvis Crown last year. Cantillo was 21-4 with one draw and 8 knockouts. A lot of people thought he beat Dolores Crown. So, but this Sergey Kovalev, I've got to see him fight. He looked like the real deal. His fight with Lionel Thompson. Back in September was pretty impressive. It was up in Bethlehem, and I saw that one on TV because I didn't get a chance to go up there. That was the beginning of the Marciano statue dedication, so I didn't want to, be trying to run the fight to write articles. I just wanted to keep as rested as possible. But the big card that we have is going to be on HBO Saturday night. It's coming out of Madison Square Garden in New York. The three main fights on that card is we have Roman Rocky Martinez. He's fighting Juan Carlos Burgos. That fight is going to be for the WBO super featherweight title. You figure Rocky Martinez is 26-1, one draw, 16 knockouts. He's fighting Burgos, who's 30-1 with 20 knockouts. You have two pretty good fighters there. Just trying to see if I see any real familiar names on either one of their records. Nothing that would scream out where a lot of guys would know. Let's see. Then also on the card, we have, just saw it here, Orlando Salido. And this is going to be a real good fight. Orlando Salido doesn't have a great record. He's 39-11, 2 draws and 27 knockouts. But he's a guy that really has improved over the last few years. He has 2 knockout wins over Juan Manuel Lopez and a pretty close decision loss to Uriel Gamboa.
He had a no-contest win over Robert Guerrero a while back, too, but it was overturned because he was on... apparently, the story was he was eating tainted meat.
He fought Guerrero back in 2006.
Yeah, that's when I first started writing for...
He beat Guerrero, and he's got a unanimous decision, and it got thrown out because it was he tested positive for steroids.
And that was a new one. He claimed that the beef that he was eating was injected with too much steroids down there.
That's a good one. I never heard that before. That is classic.
Yeah.
I mean, but look at some of the guys that he fought. He has a pretty close loss to Juan Manuel Marquez back in 2004. He beat my friend Rogers Nakagawa. He beat a guy by the name of Marty Robbins. Isn't that the guy that was a singer back in the 50s or 60s?
Yeah.
He has 2 wins over Juan Manuel Lopez, knockout wins. And he had a pretty close loss to Uriel Gamboa. Now, the guy he's fighting here... On Boxer, it said Miguel Angel Garcia. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought he was fighting Mikey Garcia. That is, he is fighting Mikey Garcia. Who is 30-0, 26 knockouts. He is a top rising star that I've gotten to watch a few times. I saw his fight against Burnaby Concepcion last year. And then I also saw a couple of his other fights that he's had on the undercards of some pay-per-view fights. So we're looking at a guy that, has some potential. Has the potential to be a really good fighter. We're going to see, if he can take down the old warrior here. Now, the main event on this card is the one that I'm really looking forward to, because I said it's got a little bit of Philadelphia flavor here, is for the middleweight title. Now, a lot of people are thinking that he may have made a mistake here. Now, we have the champion, who is a gentleman by the name of Gennady Golovkin. He's the WBA World Middleweight Champion, and he's in the fights also for the IBO Middleweight title. Gennady Golovkin is 24-0, 21 knockouts. He's been destroying guys. They said they got small and like light heavyweights and cruiserweights, and he's really been tearing a lot of guys apart. Now, he's fighting a kid from Philadelphia by the name of Gabriel Rosado, who I've seen in person about 3 or 4 times. I've covered a couple of his fights, I've talked to him, and I know his trainer pretty well, Billy Briscoe. Now, Gabriel doesn't have a great record. He's 21-5 with 13 knockouts. He's got pretty good boxing skills. His only stoppage loss was a stoppage on ESPN a couple of years ago to a fighter who we've seen on a couple times on HBO, Alfredo Angulo, who's a up here puncher. Angulo stopped him in 2 rounds, but that's because Gabe fought the wrong fight. He tried to stand there and trade with him, and you don't do that with a guy like Angulo. You know, you either come right down the middle on him, or you box him. And James Kirkland aimed at the middle on him from a Centron box. But since, you know, since his last loss in 2010, he racked up 7 straight wins over good competition. You know, you had guys like Keenan Collins out there, Jesus Soto Carras, Sakeem Powell, Charles Whitaker. The big concern here is that Gabe tries to trade with him. Now, he was the number one contender for the junior middleweight title by Cornelius Andres, which was a very winnable fight, which would have probably propelled him into a fight with Alfredo Angulo. I don't know if it was a negotiation problem or what was the holdup in getting the fight with Andres, but now Gabe has decided to step up a weight class from 154 to 160 and take on this murderous punching Russian. And I was even talking to my boy George Hansen, Philadelphia writer and boxing guru, and he's picking Gabe to win by 9th round stoppage. And I was like, you know, are you being favoritism because it's the hometown guy? But he thinks he's going to be able to box him. Listen to Billy, he's a great trainer, and force Golovkin into mistakes. I hope he's right. Gabe's definitely a big time underdog. If he tries to trade with this guy, like when he had Whitaker hurt, and he had him hurt, he was going in to finish the show. Right at the end of the round, Whitaker hit him on the counter left, and it was Gabe stumbling back to his corner pretty hurt. Can't get in there and can't try to trade, because if he tries to trade against a bigger fighter who's a legitimate puncher, it's not going to end well. You've got a box, and force the last one to mistakes, and there's no reason he can't win that middleweight title.
Yeah, it should be a good one. I might actually watch that. Now that I've had your expert analysis of how great a fight it would be. But I do have some bad news for boxing, unfortunately. I'm not sure if you heard about this, but the UFC actually bought a series of LA boxing gyms. I think 82 different locations, last I read. And we just talked about Ricky Hatton, now officially retired. Ricky Hatton. Now he's talking about going into MMA. He was speaking with Studio MMA on the red carpet of Friday night's Fighters Only World MMA Awards in Las Vegas. And he says, initially I was a Michael Bisping fan because he's just down the road in Liverpool. He's just down the road from Manchester from me. In becoming a Michael Bisping fan, I become a mixed martial arts fan. My knowledge is not as good as what it maybe can be, but bit by bit, I'm getting more and more of a fan. It fascinates me. Before I started watching Michael, though, I thought, oh, they just roll around on the floor. That is the opposite of what they do. It don't matter how good you are with your hands. They get you in a certain position and break your arm. Knowing that, it fascinates me massively. And the 34-year-old who's Hatton Promotions stages boxing cards in his home country also hinted that he could be interested in promoting MMA in the future. And he says, I'm a boxing promoter back in England now, and mixed martial arts is also popular. When you
stand on the red carpet and you see the turnout here and some of the people that are here, it shows you how far mixed martial arts has come in such a short space of time. Even though I'm in professional boxing back in England, who's not to say that I won't dip my toe in promoting of the mixed martial arts? We've got to move with the times. It's so massive now, not just in the United States, back in England and globally.
It's getting bigger and bigger all the time.
So, if Ricky Hatton's doing it, Tony, I think you got to start watching more MMA.
Well,
I do have a couple more MMA stories, and I think that'll do it for tonight. There was a recent interview. I guess it's not so recent. I think this is a story I was trying to get to last week, but never did. Former UFC heavyweight champion Junior Dos Santos had an interview with a Brazil outlet called Nogredo MMA, and he talked about his loss to Cain Velasquez, and there are some interesting remarks in here. He says, after 13 days after the fight, this interview was done, and he says, "I'm fine, I mean physically. Of course I was very sad, but I'm improving. Physically I've not had any problems during the fight, had no major injuries, just got very swollen because I took many punches and he shot on me easily." And the interviewer asks, "Have you managed to watch the fight a few times to assess what happened?" He says, "I watched and tried to understand what happened. Velasquez did his game very well. He imposed his tactics, but I did not react. I was there, but mentally it seemed I was not. Things that had happened in the fight that was normal to me, and in training at the gym, I responded very well, but there could not." And asked what his mistake was, he said, "I followed him and I just defended myself, no longer did anything. I was strong in all my other fights, was always attacking and going forward, but this time I just walked back and defended myself, no longer did anything. I reviewed the fight and realized that these things happening, seeing the opportunities I had to make some other move and did not. It really was very frustrating." And asked why he had that type of performance, he says, "It really was my head. I had some personal things going on. A bit of my attention was lacking because of it. And another thing, soon after the fight, I went to the hospital and had a scan, which showed my creatine was too high. Listen to this. The normal level is 300. Mine was in the 1400 range. I also had trouble in the urine and kidneys." So, something big was going on, and according to his doctors, JDS said that he pushed it over the line. He says, "I overtrained and problems could have happened even before the fight. I was so good that I ended up crossing the line. That was the explanation of doctors. Mine is that I was not good with my head, was having personal problems, and did not go well mentally into the fight." Well, I don't know how screwed up mentally you could be to affect your creatine levels like that.
Wow.
1,400, I mean, that's over four times the normal level of 300, if he's right there. So, that's interesting. I mean, that's the first time I've ever heard of overtraining as an excuse for losing a fight. But it makes sense. It definitely does make sense. And obviously, if you have that kind of creatine level, it's understandable that he had kidney issues as well. And from what I heard about creatine, I actually used it when I boxed a little bit. I didn't really see that much of a benefit from the supplement creatine. I don't know if that's what it seems that's probably a good explanation for why his levels were so high. He wasn't just creating it himself. It was had to be some outside influence on it, too, from a supplement or something. But when I was taking it, a lot of people told me all it does is lock water in your muscles. That was the most common thing people telling me, so I kind of stopped doing it. So it kind of makes sense that there would be a kidney issue along with that. Anyway, evaluating this, what will you do differently going forward? They asked him, and he says, "Going forward, I will be more careful. It will take my body to the limit all the time. I need to know how my body is reacting to what I am doing. I need to be a bit more professional about it. I will do tests during preparation. This fight also taught me that we have to be stronger with the head, think things strategy, and better monitor the tactical part." And asked if he would would he prefer to fight Cain immediately or have another fight first? He says, "Actually, I want Cain. I won the first one. He did a good job in the second. I think the third fight has to happen. He is the champion, and I want to fight him. I know there are people in the queue, Bigfoot and Overeem are, and if I have to meet someone before that rematch with Velasquez, I'll cope. But what I really want is Kane now. And
I think he's gonna have to earn that.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening immediately, nor should it.
No, it has to be a controversial fight of some sort for them to even ask for an immediate rematch in these cases. But there is a protocol here, and there are other guys waiting. And Overeem, if he beats Bigfoot Silva, was already in line if it wasn't for his random test that got him busted for testosterone. So we'll see what happens there. And the final question they asked... Dos Santos, do you want to respond to accusations by some that you threw the fight? I never heard these accusations until I read this interview, but nevertheless, he did answer those. He says, never, I would never do that. The main reason is that I have respect for myself and the respect that I have for my fans and the institution of the UFC itself, which is very serious. I would never throw a fight, even if it was for all the money in the world. Everything I've achieved in my life was with great difficulty, was through hard work and going against the majority opinion, always, proving that I was able, even if people do not believe. I lost this fight because Velasquez was better this time. So there you have it. That's the down and dirty on why Junior Dos Santos looked like a different guy in that fight. I thought that was kind of interesting at the creatine levels. So, goes to show you there is such thing as training way too hard for a fight. Slow it down. And that's one thing that actually Dana White has mentioned before to some of these guys. I think he was more concerned about injuries rather than fighter performance, but he had actually put out a call for some of these guys when they were having a rash of injuries. Said that these fighters should tone it down in training. And in this case, I agree with him. In some of the other cases, just worried about injuries. I didn't think it was such a good idea to send that message. But if you're training so hard, you're shooting those levels through the roof, then there's something wrong. Anyway, we talked earlier about their new performance-enhancing drug rules. But the article that I read there did not mention what Rusamar, Paul Harris, and Joey Beltran failed their UFC on FX drug tests for. And this little tidbit here that I have outlines exactly what they got busted for. Beltran tested positive for the banned anabolic steroid nandrolone. And his UFC on FX win over Igor Pokorzhak has been changed to a no contest. And he is going to have to serve a 9-month suspension. And if he had not failed the drug test, his win over Pokorzhak would have been his first light heavyweight victory in the UFC. And they haven't thrown him out, so he still might have a chance to earn his first light heavyweight victory if they bring him back. Pal Harris didn't test positive for any steroids, but he did display elevated levels of testosterone. But he still lost by KO to Hector Lombard. And he's also been suspended for 9 months. The UFC officials did put out a little statement on the positive test. They said, the UFC organization has a strict, consistent policy against the use of any illegal and or performance-enhancing drugs, stimulants, or masking agents. Both athletes have agreed to serve a 9-month suspension, retroactive to December 14th. They must pass a drug test upon completion of the suspension before receiving clearance to compete again. And the UFC uncovering cheat shows they are capable of keeping their own house in order. And UFC on FX6 took place in Australia, which means the drug testing was done by UFC officials rather than any athletic commission. So, there you have it. That's all the big media stories I have for this week in combat sports. Guys, have anything? Now's the time.
Nope, I don't want to log out, so I can get myself some beauty sleep.
All right, well, that's our extra hour here. It's just gone over the 55-minute mark, so that works out well. We'll set up probably around sometime, probably actually I could set it for midnight or so, so that it'll be close enough to our original show that people will get it, that this is a sequel. And then I will post it on the blog and have it up so that people will know to listen in two installments. All right. Well, his show will be on the original link, so I will we'll get that up on the blog tonight as soon as I get all the other stories up. I'll put that on top, and I'll have the two links right there, and then I'll blast it out to everybody.
All right. Well, sounds good to me, gentlemen. As always, it's a pleasure. We'll round it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and let's make sure that we don't have steroids in our steak, huh?
We don't have what? What was that, Tom? We don't have what in our steak?
Just make sure we don't have steroids in our steak.
Oh. That's Toledo. All right. And
okay,
go Patriots.
Guys, enjoy the fights.
Don't forget, go Patriots. I've got to put that out there. Till next week. Adios.